The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This episode also brought to you by Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. Check out their website at dlair.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. Live from behind the fifth rock to your left at Stonehenge, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it
now.
Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you? And who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, now celebrating its 25th anniversary, presents Doctor Who Podshock, episode 210. This is Lewis Trapani, and this is our live show reviewing The Pandorica Opens. It's the first of two of the series finale for 2010 with Matt Smith as the Doctor. As always, if you have not seen this particular episode of Doctor Who, you may want to hold off on this podcast until you have, because there will be spoilers ahead. So now, without any further ado, let's go to our live show reviewing The Pandorica Opens.
Vincent, can you hear me? Please.
He's very ill, Madame Binet.
It was found behind the wall in an attic in France. It's obviously a message, and you can see who it's for.
Cell 426.
Give me that. Seriously, just give it to me. I'm entitled to phone calls. Doctor?
No, and neither are you. Where is he?
You're phoning the time vortex. It doesn't always work, but the TARDIS is smart. She's rerouted the call.
This is the Royal Collection. What are you doing here?
It's about the Doctor, Mum. He's in trouble. I need to find him.
Word on the belt is you're looking for time travel.
Where are we?
Planet One. The oldest planet in the universe, and there's a cliff of pure diamond, and according to legend, on the cliff there's writing, letters 50 feet high, a message from the dawn of time, and no one knows what it says because no one's ever translated it. Till today.
Right place.
Just followed the coordinates on the cliff face. Earth, Britain, 1:02 a.m. No, p.m.
No. AD.
That's a Roman legion.
Well, yeah. The Romans invaded Britain several times during this period.
Oh, I know. My favorite topic at school, invasion of the hot Italians.
Hail Caesar. Cleopatra will see you now.
What's this?
It's a painting. Your friend Vincent. He had visions, didn't he? I thought you ought to know about this one. I assume it's some kind of warning.
Well, something's going to happen to the TARDIS.
It might not be that literal. Anyway, this is where he wanted you. Date and map reference on the door sign, see?
Does it have a title?
The Pandorica Opens.
The Pandorica? What is it?
A box, a cage, a prison. Hidden, obviously, buried for centuries. You won't find it on a map.
No, but if you buried the most dangerous thing in the universe, you'd want to remember where you put it. The Underhenge. The Pandorica.
More than just a fairy tale.
The Gallifreyan Embassy is celebrating 25 years. In fact, just this past Friday was our anniversary date. So happy anniversary to us. 25 years, a quarter of a century old. But more about that later. We're presenting Doctor Who Podshock, and with me is Dave A.C. Cooper across the pond in the UK. Hello, Dave.
I thought it was just a fairy tale, this Gallifreyan embassy.
So you were led to believe.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you very much.
And this is Louis Trapani, if you haven't figured that one out yet. And this is our podcast reviewing, our live podcast reviewing the the Pandorica Opens. And it's the series finale, at least the part one of two for the series finale for this year, 2010, Matt Smith's first series of As the Doctor. And what a ride it's been. I still can't believe we're here already. It feels like, you know, the series just began. And, well, it's been a ride. And I said that this episode was that people were going to be in for a ride. And I think that pretty much came to be. Hopefully we'll have Ken and James maybe joining us later on. I don't know where they are right now. I'm assuming probably Ken is working, perhaps. So, but we have people in the queue, and we're going to get to those people. But first, let's review a little bit of the episode itself. Now, of course, as always, this is a part one, a part two. So we always preface these reviews saying that, well, you know, it's kind of hard to judge the whole story as a whole when you only seen half of it so far. And that's what we have seen. But we'll be talking about that first half then. We didn't even get a trailer. So, we're completely oblivious to what's going to come next week, and that's the way it should be. So, and to that point, if you do have any spoilers for next week, keep them to yourselves. We don't want to hear them, and you'll be expelled if you do. though again, if we don't know anything ourselves, we won't know if it's a spoiler. Well, this episode is written by Stephen Moffat himself, who's the executive producer and lead writer of the series now, and directed by Toby Haynes, and it's a interesting tale. I thought the teaser for it was pretty interesting. I thought how it incorporated many of the past episodes incorporating characters and situations from past episodes that we've seen this series and bringing it all together to what we're seeing here as a climax. As far as production goes, some interesting notes of on the creative end. As far as like editing, some of the edits were, you know, purposely out of order. The scene where they go to meet supposedly Cleopatra and it's actually River Song, and they come back from the opening credits and they're riding horses, and then we're back on that scene, and then we're back riding horses again on Earth, we find out later. So interesting editing there that was sort of out of sequence, and they were telling both stories with the same characters in different locations and different times. Not different times, but... Oh, was it? Yeah, it was...
Yeah, it was out of sequence. Yeah. It was intercut.
Yeah. Speaking of cuts, if you go to our website for the promo for this live show, and we have a photograph there from Stonehenge and with River Song, the Doctor, and Amy in it, and River Song's holding the head of... Oh, by the way, this goes without say, but I must say it. If you haven't seen the episode the Pandorica Opens, there'll be spoilers here, so be warned. Okay, that's out of the way. So there's a scene there with River holding the head of, you know, the decapitated head of the Cyberman, and that's not actually in the episode. At first I thought maybe I missed it on the first run, and then I was rewatching it just now, right before our live show.
No, it is. It's on the surface. They show it
with her holding the head.
They don't holding it. No. But the one that attacks Amy below in the under is actually on the upper
level.
They
show it, but they don't show that scene. If you go to our website, there's a scene with the Doctor, Amy, and River Song. River's holding the head, showing it to the Doctor, like, and with the expression on her face. I don't think it was a behind the scenes photo. It looks like they look like they're acting in it. So I'm thinking either maybe perhaps it was a cut scene that, you know, where they had to edit it down, or unless we're seeing it next week.
Perhaps it was a scene that was to establish that it was an inert Cyberman, so they didn't need to worry about it, and maybe cast aside. But the episode ran for 48 minutes or more. Mm-hmm. They may have just had to make a few cuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, as we've seen with, going back to the Hungry Earth, where there was a good 15 minutes of footage that, you know, wound up on the proverbial cutting room floor. So you know, I'm sure that's the case with these other episodes as well, where there's lots of scenes which just don't make it into the episodes. But it's interesting, you know, it's interesting that they chose to pick that also as a publicity image. I think James just popped in. So let's get James.
Oh, well,
on
James
board.
A good publicity image, yeah. Can go with that.
Mr. Norton. Hello, James.
Hello, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm good. Sorry, I'm a little bit late. I do beg your pardon. I lost a little bit of the track of time. It got away from me.
You are pardoned. And no begging. You can always have my pardon.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, you're commanded to do another 25 years of Gallifreyan Embassy's penance.
I'm sure I can stretch.
He was doing
to that.
His whole life doing penance to the Gallifreyan Embassy for the first 25 years.
Something along those lines, indeed.
This is what was all about you, James. This whole Gallifreyan Embassy was all about you. We were actually, you know, a bit late, you know, March, and we started in June, so, you know.
Exactly. I was born before it began. I was there from the offset.
But well, before you came on, Lewis said, I hope he hasn't joined the Roman Legion.
No, thankfully not. Thankfully
yeah,
not. I am not made out of plastic.
If they flip down and run.
Yes. No autons here.
I failed to mention, since Dave is with us, and Dave is a father, and even though I don't think it's in the UK, but it's in the US today is Father's
yes.
Day. So happy Father's Day to
same
all those.
Same here, yeah. Father's Day in the UK as well.
Oh, okay, it is. Because isn't Mother's Day different?
Mother's Day is
yes.
different for some reason, yeah.
Hmm.
I don't fully understand why,
but there we are. Here we all are. So
I think it's because Mother's Day was a lot longer established, and it was only later introduced Father's Day. But anyway, time is limited.
That could be the case. So, so James, as you know, we're here reviewing the Pandorica Opens, and so we're just going to continue what we were talking about. We were just touching on some points.
Indeed. Sorry to have gotten you
sidetracked.
Please continue.
If you saw the Doctor Who Confidential, you'll notice, you would have to, because they made a big deal of it, but it's interesting nonetheless that when they do find the box, the under Stonehenge, they were playing the music from Raiders of the Lost Ark that to create that whole pacing in that scene, and I think it worked very well. In fact, on the second viewing, I can almost see, you know, hear what Murray Gold was doing, and it's interesting how they did that. And what's also interesting is that when the costume for the 11th Doctor was first announced and we saw pictures of it, a lot of people were making comparisons to Professor Jones, you know, Indiana Jones' alter ego when he's not, you know, in the fedora and leather jacket. He's when he's in university as Professor Jones, he was, and it had some connections there. I'm sure probably just a coincidence, but it's... I just had to point it out either way. And speaking of Spielberg coincidences, since that is a Steven Spielberg-directed film, there were some scenes that reminded me very much of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, except for instead of Devil's Tower, it's Stonehenge, where it's all the ships converging above Stonehenge, and it just reminded me, with them all buzzing about and all that. Of course, they were there for a different reason, but it just had... I don't know if it was, you know, tip of the hat to Close Encounters, but you can't really do that scene without having that similarity there anyway, but I think it worked. Speaking of things that worked, I thought we were just talking about, James, before you joined us, the head of the Cybermen, there's a publicity photo that's on our site that's actually probably a cut scene which has River holding the head of the decapitated Cybermen on the at Stonehenge above ground, and that's not actually in the episode. But we do see it later. I mean, we do see it at night in the episode, and then we do see it later when it attacks Amy. And the I think that scene worked well, even though I thought it was kind of, you know, I didn't think Cybermen parts, without the human counterpart, I didn't think Cybermen would actually function, you know, without their flesh parts. But it's, like I said, it still worked. So no biggie there. But I guess the only other tweak I might have made and this is really nitpicking, is maybe the doctor not realizing it was Rory maybe went a bit too long. Granted, he had other things on his mind and was wrapped up in other thoughts, but it still was good. Overall, I can't help but give it 5 out of 5 TARDIS groans. I think it was an exciting story. It's hard to have anything to really, any real qualms about it. It's interesting nonetheless, and I had a great time and thoroughly enjoyed it. What about you two?
Well, James, I'll wait for James, certainly.
All right, James. I'd probably put James. Oh, James is muted for some reason. James? I just realized he was muted again. Maybe he had to reconnect. James, are you there? Oh, he's gone.
Right. Should I go while he
yes, please.
Reconnects?
I'm sorry. We'll try to get James back.
No. I'd always follow on from one of the...
Again. First it was you, yeah. Dave. First silence had fallen on you. Now silence has fallen on James.
You know, anybody with a cynical mind might think he's sabotaging James so he can keep on the show. But I'm not like that. Well, I was very nervous watching this first one because, as you probably, well, everybody here has watched it, obviously, there was a very long sequence of little sketches or cameos of people that had been in earlier episodes, you know, List 10 and Churchill and so on, and leading up to it. And I thought, oh, he's not overcomplicating it, is he? He's not overcomplicating it. He's not going to go, you know, Russell T. Davies on us. And I was so apprehensive watching it that I wasn't really enjoying it. And then they kept stressing this... the fact of fairy tales again. They kept coming about fairy tales, and thought, oh, please, you know, it's not going to be magic. Or, like Ken would say, he would be upset if it was. And so I was watching it, almost waiting for the episode to fall on its face. And then when we got to the bit where Riversong, who's in the TARDIS, and the TARDIS is going wrong, and it lands at Amy's house, and then she sees that the house has been ransacked, and then she finds, you know, the Roman book and the picture of Rory in the gladiator outfit and so on. And then she says this one line, and I was corrected on the earlier show. I thought she said, why did I let you out? But I think somebody said the words was actually, oh, Doctor, why do I let you out? And I'm wondering whether that's some scene yet to come, that Riversong, in effect, has already lived this part of the story. And that's the way the Doctor's going to get out, that she has the means to let him out. She says, why do I let you out? And I couldn't see what other reference that could be to any past stories. So that got me interested. And then
adding to the whole mystery of the character, you know, because it's something that, like, perhaps a wife would say or a mother might say, and I think it just adds to that, or, you know...
Right.
You know, you just spilled a drink on you. I can't take you anywhere. Or this is why we can't have good things, that sort along those lines, perhaps.
It certainly could be. But I was just wondering whether it was an inkling to how the Doctor is going to, you know, escape or be got out. But then what happened was the story went along I hadn't realised, although I think Ian, the Sixth Doctor, said to me afterwards, well, when he was listening to the Doctor describing what sort of a trap this was, you know, this person comes and destroys your world, and this thing, and he said, he thought immediately that it was the Doctor being described, but it never occurred to me that there wasn't something inside, and I was worried, oh, it's going to be Davros, and it's going to be, you know, we're going back to the old ways, and I didn't really want it. But then, of course, it was quite a surprise for my thick brain, anyway, to realise that the whole thing had been a ruse to get the Doctor there, and the actual thing was to contain him, because they went to great lengths to mention the number of deadlocks and things like that. And we know perfectly well that his sonic screwdriver won't get him through a deadlock, so it was obviously designed for him. So at that point, I started to relax and enjoy it. But really, I'd spoil the story for myself, because it's like if you've got a vested interest in like a Friends performing on stage and this, that, and the other, and you're almost reading the lines for them because you're scared they're going to make a mistake, and you can't relax because you're in that sense. So when I watched it the second time, as we were preparing some audio, I really enjoyed it because I knew that it wasn't fairy tales. That was the construct of the these different races getting together and seeding these stories to entice the Doctor through. And I really did enjoy it. One thing I didn't particularly like, I didn't like the sort of octopus-type Cyberman head. I thought it was a little bit overdone with all the extensions. I mean, when we saw on the surface, it had little cables coming out of it, but it was sort of wrapped round Amy about 10 times. A little bit like that tongue was done on the...
When we first saw it, when it was like from the point of view of the head and we didn't know it was the head yet, I thought it was going to be a Cybermat. You know, when I said, oh, we're going to see a Cybermat, and then it was just, it's the head. I thought the whole thing, as I said before, I think it was a bit over the top to a certain degree. Like, I didn't, you know, the whole, I mean, obviously the whole skull in it was playing for the fear factor and the sound effects that was going on at that time. And, you know, and then it was just chomping at, like, jaws, you know, the head was opening and closing. And it didn't seem like, to me, I didn't think the cyber parts would work without the human inside.
That's it, because that makes it more of a robot. I think it was done for the younger audience to just give them a bit of a fear factor there that they were actually really in peril. But of course, it was also perhaps to emphasise the actual nature and demise of Amy later, because it wasn't at the hands of the Cybermen or anything. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. One thing that... I didn't mention, who was it? Scardis on our show earlier. It was when we saw the earlier part with Churchill and, the chap who designed the robots, who in actual fact
is a robot
built by the Daleks. I'm not sure about the timing of that, because he still had the black glove on, which was after the story with the Doctor. But he's supposed to have left to go off with his girlfriend. So I'm not too sure about that.
Maybe,
but
he was still packing his bags.
Yeah, but anyway, you want to let other people on. The second time, I actually really enjoyed it. I'm sure there were inconsistencies, but we're hostage to the second part, really. But I have very, very high hopes for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's when it ended, I tweeted out, you know, to be continued, those words I just about hate about now. So I think James is back with us. So, James, are you here?
I am.
Yeah, I'm sorry we lost you.
I am sorry about that. Yeah, I didn't know what happened.
The silence had fallen on you.
Yeah, I know. I'm just sorry that I haven't really heard much of what you chaps have said. I'm probably going to be repeating quite a little bit of it, but never mind.
That's all right. We'll beg your pardon.
So you'll have to forgive me if I do repeat myself or repeat what you have previously said, but never mind. I really, really enjoyed this episode. I'm going to echo a little bit what Dave was saying, in that I don't particularly want to give a rating at this stage, because it all does hinge very much on what happens next time and what the Big Bang is going to be like. And I think that's the difficulty here, because if I have a gripe about the episode, it's that it's left a lot of loopholes open and a lot of things that don't fully make sense as yet. But the series has been so fantastic so far, and I've loved almost every moment of it. And even the worst, in inverted commas, episode in this season has been some of the best Doctor Who we've had on television for a long time. And that's not to berate the work of Russell or anything. This has just felt
fresh.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's felt fresh and new. And maybe it's just because I'm looking at things through new eyes. Yeah. You know, it has had that arc running through it from start to finish, but it's not felt overdone, the series. And the Pandorica opens is a perfect example of that. It's fantastic that River's back. River Song, we knew that it was pretty much going to be the case because it was alluded to at the end of the two-parter earlier on, which she was involved with the Angels.
Yeah, and I think she was actually in the preview trailer where, you know, for the series, that back, you know, when the series began, we saw her.
And I love the fact that she feigned the fact that she was Cleopatra, because that had been revealed quite a bit, and spoilers and so on flooded all over the internet that the episode was going to include Cleopatra, which I thought was very interesting, and I wondered who that they were going to cast to play Cleopatra. And it turns out to be really a little bit of a red herring, because of course it's River herself. How could you not love the fact that they brought together pretty much every major Doctor Who baddie, certainly over the past 5 years, if not forever, all together.
Verbally, they brought them all together. We didn't see them all, but we saw enough to kind of, you know, create that illusion that they were all there.
And it's quite interesting because from the Confidential, you actually saw that they had a whole host of other creatures there in the background, which you don't really see in the episode. They were there.
I was looking.
They filmed them. Mm-hmm. But you didn't quite catch them all. And I think it's very appropriate. You can kind of understand them all coming together to fight this problem, to even the Daleks, because as they say, it's across every reality. It's not just this universe, but all universes. And everything's going to be destroyed. There's going to be nothing left of the universe at all. Which I was wondering if that was the case, because in a sense, because they alluded to in the start of the episode saying, oh, this is the true warrior, the thing that everybody fears, the conqueror of worlds, and yada yada. And I thought, well, that sounds a lot like the Doctor. So it was very clever how they twisted that round and made it a prison in itself, rather than a prison for the Doctor, rather than them being a prisoner in the Pandorica in the first place, who's trying to get out. They're just opening it and scanning the Doctor, and the Pandorica is configuring itself to be able to hold the Doctor indefinitely. Quite why the TARDIS is having its problems, I don't know, and that's the key thing. I don't fully appreciate why the TARDIS is having the problems it's having, particularly in that we've seen that River knows what she's doing in the TARDIS. She can fly it almost better than the Doctor can fly it. And that's going to be a wibbly wobbly, tiny whiny type thing.
It's another force controlling the TARDIS. So.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, but that was unexplained, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was unexplained, and that's my point, is it's been alluded to, it's been said, oh, there's some external force controlling the TARDIS. But what? And quite what has made it explode? I mean, who is that creepy voice saying silence will fall and all the rest of it? What was that?
Can I just add, James, though it might bring in the other aspect of the Lodger episode we saw last week that was there, as well as being a story.
Gave
the indication that other things could affect the TARDIS.
Indeed, well, and quite, and I hope that the sort of what that particular TARDIS was doing there in Colchester and above a flat and all the rest of it will be explained. And maybe that does link to this particular episode, because it seems like every other episode has had a point to it, some form of arc, albeit subtly. There's always been a reason for it.
And the crack was present in that flat as well, wasn't it? The closing
it
scene
was.
Behind the fridge.
Behind the fridge, behind the bin, in the flat. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this from start to finish. I have to confess that I was sat in front of the telly for about 2 or 3 hours before the episode even started, just gearing up to it, which is unusual for me because usually I don't really watch a great deal of telly. But
you were practicing, so you got it right.
Well, I just couldn't wait for the episode to start. I couldn't wait for it. I was really excited. And now I'm even more excited for next week, for the Big Bang. And Ken's fate, he pretty much straight after the episode, Ken updated his Facebook status simply to say, how many ways to say amazing, which I thought summed it up fantastically. I mean, this whole series has been unbelievable. I can't wait to see the finale, but at the same time, I am going to be very sad to see it all finish, because not only has this been some of the best episodes of Doctor Who so far, certainly since the series has been brought back, but also it's some of the best television ever. Particularly things like Victims and the Doctor, the Flesh and Stone two-parter, the Lullabit has been terrific.
You could argue, though, James, that the way it's been constructed, if the final episode doesn't bring it all together, it undermines the whole of the series as well. So it's a big...
It does.
There's a lot riding on it.
No, we'll see. What you don't know is that it's going to continue on to the Christmas special in December, so you'll have to wait until till then before it really concludes.
I severely hope not.
There'll be another to be continued. Doctor Who returns this Christmas.
But I would really like to see I'm sure it will get resolved in terms of what's the external influence on the TARDIS. Is Amy really dead? Is she not going to be a companion next series? What's the deal with Rory? Is it really Rory? Is it Rory that's been possessed? Is it Rory's consciousness implanted into an Auton? Has Rory not been real from the start? Has Rory really died and they've simply sort of taken on board his memories from Amy or something? Who knows? There's all of
the whole
questions.
Character from Amy's head.
Yes, and the question is, how did they do that other than looking at a few books? You can't look at a few books.
As mighty as these forces are, and even if joining in an alliance is still what they're doing, what they have done seems to be a little bit beyond their capabilities.
Indeed, given that, and the Daleks, if they could control time like that, you know, you've got to think that they wouldn't, after they've achieved their ends, to sort of put the Doctor in the Pandorica, what's going to stop them from trying to take over the universe and get rid of everybody else there? You know, something doesn't quite add up.
Can I just paraphrase something that Benjamin Elliott said, because he's not here to say himself, he thought that it was just as well these weren't Davros's original Daleks, because they would have probably thought, oh, well, the Doctor, whatever he's doing is destroying the universe. We'll help him out, because that was actually what Davros tried to do with his reality bomb, wasn't it, in a sense? So,
well, yes, apart from the fact that there it would have been a universe exclusively of Daleks, whereas now it's a universe devoid of anything from start to finish. Every single universe, all the parallel universes, all the alternate timelines, there's nothing. Every reality is gone. Whereas the whole point of that was to create a universe that was just exclusively populated by Daleks, which is what the Daleks want. They're a bunch of Nazis, essentially extreme Nazis who think they're the master race and want to completely control the galaxy. Here it's different. Here you can understand that alliance from the point of view of, even the Daleks don't want to see the universe completely destroyed, because if it's completely destroyed, so are they. But what I didn't quite appreciate is, well, what's to stop them from stabbing each other in the back? And even if you're a Cybermen or a Centauran or whatever, surely that's got to be in the back of your brain, mind, whatever. And that I didn't quite fully appreciate or understand. But I'm sure, given that the series so far has just been incredible, I'm sure it's all going to be wrapped up beautifully. But I'm going to reserve giving a TARDIS drone rating until I've seen next week's episode, because I think the two parties really should be reviewed
as a
two-parter.
Sure. Yeah, well, I said that at the top of the show before you got here as well, so it just goes without say that we need to do that. Well, as you know, the Doctor meets up with the Romans in this story, and as you also know, the Doctor has been around for a while, so this isn't the first time he had met up with the Romans. Going back to the year 64 AD, it was the first Doctor, played by William Hartnell, who had an adventure with the Romans in a story called The Romans. And as you may have guessed, that's going to be our Audible.com pick or our recommendation for your free selection for this episode of Doctor Who Podshock. Audible.com is the leading provider of digital audiobooks with over 75,000 titles to choose from in every genre, be it thrillers, business, history, science fiction, and more. Audible content is compatible with iPods, MP3 players, and over 500 other devices for your listening pleasure anytime, anywhere, just like this podcast. And for you, the listeners of Doctor Who Podshock, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with your free 14-day trial to give you a chance to check them out. So as always, we would like to make a referral or recommendation on what title to choose as your free title, but you're open to choose any that you like that they offer. But we're going back to a very early story in Doctor Who. This is The Romans. As I said, it's a first Doctor story played by William Hartnell, and it's a pure historical adventure. It takes place right outside of Rome. As I said, in 64 AD, the TARDIS lands, and its occupants are enjoying a restful time in a villa close to Rome. Their peace and quiet is shattered when a visit to the city sees the Doctor mistaken as a lyre player, and him and Vicky are pursued by an assassin. Meanwhile, Ian and Barbara are kidnapped by slave traders. Using all his ingenuity to gain the freedom of Nero's court, the Doctor inadvertently inspires the Emperor's plans to completely rebuild Rome. Can the TARDIS crew reunite and escape Rome before it's burned to the ground? Find out in The Romans. This could be your selection. To download your free audiobook today, go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/arttrap, A-R-T-T-R-A-P, for your free audiobook. Hey, let's hear a little bit from that right now. Now, remember, this is them enjoying a little R&R before mayhem begins.
Precariously balancing on the brink of a stony outcrop, the TARDIS takes form, rocking to and fro as the ground beneath it begins to give way under the sudden weight. Inside, the Doctor stands at the control console, watched by his three companions, Ian, Barbara, and Vicky.
Here we are, safely down.
What's that movement, Doctor?
Mm?
Well, surely you can feel it.
Doctor, what's happening?
No,
take off again, Doctor.
Hold on.
The time travelers are tumbled about as the TARDIS pitches headlong from the ledge. Episode 1, The Slave Traders. The TARDIS has come to land half on its side in a shallow, boulder-strewn ditch. In the weeks since it fell, the ship has been well camouflaged with foliage from the surrounding woodland. In the sun-drenched courtyard of a Roman villa, Ian is reclining on a comfortable couch, languidly reaching for a bunch of grapes from a fruit-laden side table. The Doctor, meanwhile, is tending a small shrubbery. Both men are dressed in luxuriant togas.
So you're awake at last, young man.
No need to say it like that, Doctor. I thought the whole idea of us coming here was that we should all have a nice rest.
My dear boy, there's a great deal of difference between resting and being sort of bone idle.
Well, have a grape.
No, thank you. I've had my breakfast.
Where are Barbara and Vicky? They've gone down to the village.
But the Doctor's attention has returned to watering his plants.
Don't you think that plant's had enough water, Doctor?
The answer, dear boy, is pipes.
Pipes?
Pipes, Chesterton. Pipes.
How?
Oh. You see, the Romans, unfortunately, didn't know how to transport water satisfactorily. That's why they built their aqueducts. Now, if they'd experimented with pipes...
Oh, I see what you're getting at, yeah.
Good, good. Yes, yes, they have.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, my dear young man, why do you let your mind wander so? You asked me just now if Barbara and Vicky had gone down to the village. I gave you a plain and simple answer. Yes, they have.
Smiling to himself, Ian indulgently pops another grape into his mouth. Vicky is hurrying excitedly down a paved country road, lined with dense bushes. Barbara follows at a more leisurely pace. They, too, are dressed as Roman citizens.
Come on, Barbara. Oh, Vicky, there's no need to be in such a hurry. The village isn't going to run away. Oh, it's so hot.
It's just that I want to get there before the market closes.
All right, we'll get there. But not so fast. Oh, come on.
Well, there you have it, a clip from the Romans now. That was the very beginning of the story, so everyone was sort of resting and relaxing a bit there, so it's before any action begins in the story. So I forgot to mention that this was narrated, or has linking, bridging narration, or linking narration by William Russell, who plays Ian Chesterton, who you also heard in that clip too, though the two voices are separated by somewhat 45 years, so there's a difference there in the voices, but it's one and the same person, William Russell. And also heard is Jaclyn Hill as Barbara, and Vicky is Maureen O'Brien. That's The Romans, Doctor Who, The Romans. And this could be your free audiobook, or it could be any of your choosing. To download your free audiobook today, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/arttrap. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com. podcast.com/arttrap for your free audio book. Now let's return to more Romans, though a couple decades later, but are they really Romans? As we continue our live review of The Pandorica Opens. Yeah, we're going to open it up to callers. You can call our show while it's live. The phone number to call, the talk show number while we're doing the live show is, hold on, it's lots of
724-444-7444.
Yeah, 724-444-7444. And the call ID is 23358 for Dr. Hugh Podshock while we're recording live. So before we do, we're going to go into another clip. Also, a reminder that Doctor Who Podshock supporting subscribers will be bumped up in the queue. And remember, we can't do the show without our supporters, so we do want to thank them for a low monthly subscription fee. You can, as a show of support, not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll get extra content as well. We're going to be putting another extra show out very shortly. And to become a Podshock supporting subscriber, go to our website, gallifreyanimacy.org or podshock.net, and click on the top banner there to become that self-explanatory banner to become a subscriber, supporting subscriber. And if you already are one, thank you for your continued support as always.
There was a goblin or a trickster or a warrior, a nameless, terrible thing soaked in the blood of a billion galaxies, the most feared being in all the cosmos.
How did it end up in there?
You know fairy tales. A good wizard tricked it.
I hate good wizards and fairy tales. They always turn out to be him.
So it's kind of like Pandora's box then. Almost the same name, with all the worst things in the world in it. That was my favorite book when I was a kid. What's wrong?
Your favorite school topic, your favorite story. Never ignore a coincidence, unless you're busy, in which case always ignore a coincidence.
So can you open it?
Easily. Anyone can break into a prison, but I'd rather know what I'm going to find first.
It's already opening. There are layers and layers of security protocols in there.
How long do we have?
Hours at the most.
Think of the fear that went into making this box.
So why would it start to open now?
No idea.
And how could Vincent have known about it? He won't even be born for centuries.
These stones are great big transmitters broadcasting a warning to everyone, everywhere, to every time zone. But Pandorica is opening.
Doctor, you said everyone could hear it. So who else is coming?
Around this planet, there are at least 10,000 starships.
What kind of starships?
Daleks.
Cyber ships.
No, Dalek ships. Listen to them. Those are Dalek ships.
Yes, Dalek ships and cyber ships.
Well, we need to start a firefight. Turn them on each other. I mean, that's easy. It's the Daleks. They're so cross.
Sontaran, four battle fleets.
Sontaran. Talk about cross. Who stole all their handbags?
Tyranitil, Slovene, Chelonian, Nestine, Dravin, Sycorax, Hemagos, Zygon, Atraxi, Draconian. They're all here for the Pandarica.
What are you? What could you possibly be?
Everything that ever hated you is coming here tonight.
And you've got any plans on taking the Pandarica tonight? Just remember who's standing in your way. Remember every black day I ever stopped you. And then, do the smart thing.
Let somebody else try first.
And once again, thank you, Dave, for compiling these clips. It really does help a lot.
Right. Okay. I think, by the way, there was a Torchwood reference. The Weevils were also included,
I saw them in The Confidential. I'm not sure if I saw them in the episode proper, but I'll have to keep an eye out the next time I see it. But, yeah. And they were in their overalls again. Standard issue. Weevil attire. All right. Well, let's get to the queue, and as always, Podshock supporting subscribers will be bumped up, and so the first one up will be Mystery Presenter again. Hello, Mystery Presenter. You're live on Doctor Who Podshock.
Hello. Hello, James and Dave. Sorry, Lewis.
Hey.
Yeah. Hi.
Is James there?
James should be here, yes.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Hi. One thing with the set, though, I like the idea of using Stonehenge.
What about Stonehenge?
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
But they used it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only thing they used it for the day, though, was all they could afford.
Yeah.
As it says in
and
the
then they used Foamhenge.
Yeah. Also, Tosh, like, right. Being one, I can't think of the bad guy. Like, it's the plastic guy. What's the name of those again?
Nestine.
The Nestine, okay.
Oh, the Nestine.
Yeah, the Nestine conscious.
Being one of those in the end. I was wondering, like, when he disappeared, how he ends up getting there. Also, I know from the past, like, there's a Tom Baker story that was set in Stone Cell.
The Stones of Blood?
Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was one of the key to time, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think that was part of the key to time series.
Yeah.
It wasn't Stonehenge. It was just another. It was a, you know,
ancient ring of
similar, henge, and stones.
Yeah.
It was a Stonehenge, not the Stonehenge.
Yeah. Also, I was just wondering, you know, with the queen, like, is that supposed to be before she met the doctor or after?
No, after, because she remembers the doctor.
After.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She has an extended life, so she's, I don't know how much longer that is.
Actually, I was a bit surprised to see the Vincent van Gogh at the start.
Yes.
A Darth in chat.
It was an unusual place to start, yeah.
Darth just reminded us in chat that she knew the doctor prior to him meeting her.
Yeah, from the archives as well,
Also, where Rufuson left a clue for the doctor, the writing on the wall saying hello, sweet. I knew, like, it was Rufuson once he saw that.
Yeah, well, that's her expression.
Yeah. Also, I was a bit surprised, like, when you saw her as Cleopatra, or at least claiming to be.
Well, it's kind of surprising because you would think that her lipstick would have just fooled everyone to think that she's Cleopatra, that she didn't need to dress the part. But it was just, you know, just one of the little things they did.
I think it gives this about 5 TARDIS groans.
You're giving it 5 TARDIS groans?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so you enjoyed it. Anything you felt that was out of place or something that you would have changed or tweaked a bit or... You just liked it exactly the way it was?
At the top of my head.
All right. Well, thank you, as always, once again.
Yeah. Okay.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Thanks for the input.
Cheers.
Yeah. Bye.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Ta-ra.
Let's get Darth in right now. He's been talking in chat, and he does remind us that the Beast Below took place in the 33rd century. I'm trying to remember what the subtitle was when we saw her, when we saw her in this story.
It's 51st century.
Yeah.
The same year, it's 5145.
That bothered me as well, Darth. It's a quite rightly picked up on. Firstly, you know, is she in the right time zone?
Well, because we
know that she eventually
got
a time in it.
She's like, isn't she like frozen at between 30 and 40 years old or something like that?
Right.
I didn't know where. I did wonder how she managed.
They extended her life or something like that.
No, I think James is referring to the River Song being in that time period.
I'm referring to River being in that time period, and how did she get
Starship? Wrong show. I'm sorry.
Because she didn't have her time manipulator by that stage.
I thought it was the same time zone, and obviously space travel is available in those times, isn't it? So
yeah, within this episode, River is, at the beginning at least, always in 5145. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense, but I think James, you're right. There is this sneaking thing that's going around in the back of at least my mind, and apparently yours too, that somehow the River stuff doesn't make any sense. And a part of that is because of the setting of Silence in the Library is definitely 51st century. Mm-hmm. At least that's my understanding of it. And, you know, 5145 is clearly way into the 52nd century. And granted, she's a time traveler, but if the 51st century is sort of her home time period now, how does she get there? You know, we don't have any real connection between Silence in the Library and Series 5 about where River is. It's quite confusing.
Of course, at the end of the story we're watching now, if she keeps the vortex manipulator thing, the time, you know, off the time belt.
Yeah.
She may travel back to it later, if you know what I mean.
Sure, that's true. It's just massively complicated, and I just think that somehow or another, at some point, either Stephen Moffat or somebody else down the road is really going to screw it up. It's going to be very clear that something is massively screwed up because it's so intricately done. It's bordering on too clever by half for me. But that's little bitty points. I think, in general, my impression of the episode is, again, sort of split between, you know, me as a consumer of the new series and me as a consumer of the overall thing, and me as, you know, an observer of television for television's sake. And I think that, you know, for the casual viewer, it must have been quite a good experience, I would have thought, because Stephen Moffat does hear what he does so well, and that is, you know, he keeps you guessing about what's going on. He introduces major new plot revelations that take the plot off in a different direction once every 5 minutes. So, you know, you're really on your back foot the whole time, but you're struggling to keep up with the narrative. So because you're in that state of confusion, you're not going to change the channel. And at the end of the day, that is what the job of a television writer is to keep you on the channel. And I think that this episode does that very well indeed. I think that there are a lot of little things about it that I really liked. I mean, you know, I don't think that we had to go to the Doctor Who Confidential to find out that this was very inspired by Indiana Jones and that it had that texture running throughout it, as indeed I think most of this series has. I mean, I think, you know, we've been told that this series' watchword is fairy tale, but I don't actually believe that. I think that this series' watchword is Indiana Jones. And I think it gives a lie, actually, to that, or at least makes ironic, the statement that River Song gives us in Silence in the Library, or that the Doctor gives us in Silence in the Library, where he says that he hates archaeologists, because I think that, essentially, the 11th Doctor has turned into a kind of Indiana Jones. You know, and this episode was the full culmination of that, you know, the direct theft of the beginning of Temple of Doom with the whole, I just put poison in your glass, so you've got to pay me money in order to to get the antidote. You know,
he just needed to trade his,
washing around the.
He just needed to trade his sonic screwdriver for a sonic whip.
Right. You know, and it would have been pretty much the same thing. It's really, really obvious that we're drawing inspiration from Indiana Jones. And I love that because I love Indiana Jones, so I don't mind that one little bit. And I think that, you know, it's great because Doctor Who has always done pastiches of things, but usually those things of which it has done a pastiche are things, you know, from the relatively distant past. Now we're doing something that is, you know, modern and current. And it's kind of, yeah, and so it's nice to have that rift going on. I think I'm going to join here with Dave a little bit in his skepticism of where we might be headed with this thing, though, because I think if you really start to pick it apart, it doesn't hold up. This is a very much of a confection of an episode in which, you know, it tastes really good, but it doesn't do much for your nutritional needs. And I think that once you look back over what it is that you've just consumed, you're like, why the hell did I eat that? And one of the biggest things is the whole plan. I mean, the core of the episode. Why in the hell are these guys getting together in their grand alliance with hundreds of thousands, probably millions and billions of different creatures coming together to try to get the Doctor into the Pandorica? If you got that much firepower, just take him out. Why create an elaborate plan?
It's sort of the whole Batman thing from, you know, where they devise all these, you know, devices to capture Batman and you know, stop him without just shooting him.
It's funny you said that because I said that very same thing on Cultum Collective. I was like, it does remind me of Batman the movie from 66. And it's like, you've got the Batman, you've got Joker, you've got the Riddler, mm-hmm. Catwoman all coming together for an incredibly ludicrous plan. But it still feels fun. But, you know, at the core of this thing, it really makes no sense why they're doing what they're doing. They should have just pulled out their guns. They've got him right there. Don't even bother putting him into the Pandorica. Shoot him. He regenerates. Shoot him. He regenerates. Shoot him. He regenerates. You're done. You know, so.
They also wanted to destroy the TARDIS as well, because it was the Doctor in the TARDIS that was causing the cracks, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know that that's true. I think if you kill the Doctor, they're just trying to kill the Doctor. I don't think that they're really doing anything with the TARDIS, because they say right up front, it's only the Doctor who can pilot the TARDIS. So they don't believe that the TARDIS is anything without
the
Doctor.
Maybe there's some reason why he's meant to be alive, though I don't know how he's going to live in that cube. There's no food or water or oxygen, really.
So. Or air.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Well, who knows? I mean, there are, you know, things that are coming down around his head, maybe they do in fact provide some air, but why keep him alive? I don't get it.
Well, that's
what,
maybe there's a reason for it that we don't know yet in the second part.
Well, that's true, and that's what I'm saying, is that, you know, the second part really is going to make this thing either be incredibly brilliant or just be kind of okay. And, you know, it's entirely possible that this entire series is going to fall down right here at the last peg. I can see great potential for that, because there's so many things that are up in the air, so many unexplained little things that I don't know that an hour is enough to resolve it all. I really don't think that we're going to hit every single point. And I think that at the end of this, you're going to have these people who believed, you know, that Stephen Moffat could do no wrong, that he walked on water, that he was the master of intricate plotting. And they're going to say, well, you know what? Yeah, he's good, but actually he's not as much of a master as we thought, because he left this undone, he left that undone, he left the other undone. Because I just don't see how he's going to pull everything together. I really, really, really don't see how everything's going to be satisfactory. But one thing that I do think is satisfactory, and one of the best things about this episode for me, was the movement in Amy and her character. And I think that we are going to, because he specifically raised the point of having the Doctor say, at last, finally, here at the end of the season, does it ever bother you that your life makes no sense? Because that's what I felt the entire way through, that her life really doesn't make any sense. So at least we're going to get that addressed in some way, and that's a really good thing. Now, I should point out, there are a lot of things here that I really loved. And one of the things that I thought that was just brilliant was the whole Auton deal. I thought that was fantastic. because I honestly believed at the end of Cold Blood that really we were just going to have Rory coming back. I mean, that was obvious that we were going to have him coming back, but I thought it was just going to be some very simple thing that didn't make a whole lot of sense where he just walks through the crack and there you go. But to have him turn out to be an Auton, and this kind of Auton, which is a very new kind of Auton. It's been done before, but it's only been done really in Brave New Town, which is a Eighth Doctor and Lucy adventure, where you have the Autons capable of creating fully believable replicas of humans that had, you know, real personalities that didn't appear to be made of plastic and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was great as a fan of the Eighth Doctor and Lucy stuff to have a concept that was actually started there brought into the main series. And it really surprised me the way in which they brought Rory back and the way that they appear to be leaving him in a different condition than we believed that he was at first. And, you know, at least for this next week, I can entertain the notion that he's been an Auton the entire time and, you know, that somehow the Nestines are able to manipulate the time field so that they can, even though he appeared to die, they could snatch his consciousness at the last moment and recreate him later or whatever. I mean, it's a very interesting thing that's been set up here, and your mind can go wild for the next week. And I think it's one of the most interesting and compelling uses of the Autons that we've had since their inception. It's far better to me than their use in Rose, mm-hmm. although I understand why that was such a simplistic recreation of, you know, their first appearance in Spearhead. But this is really, for me, just a great usage of the Autons, and I really dug it. Mm-hmm. I also thought, and you know, I don't really like Cybermen all that much, and I have to admit that when the head popped open and the skull fell out, I was actually scared. For the first time in ever, I was actually scared by Cybermen. Now, it doesn't make any sense. I don't really understand, you know, in hindsight, why there would be a skull inside there, because I thought they just took out the brains and they put the brains up to some sort of electronic assembly, and it was really weird to actually see a skull inside one. But it was nevertheless effective in that sort of cheap thrill way. And again, it was very Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, yeah, that's straight from...
You were waiting for the snake to come out of the eye socket.
Well, we got the snake, didn't we? We got the snake in terms of the cyber nervous system.
Yeah.
You know, that was great, too, you know. Mm-hmm. That whole thing down there is totally Raiders you know, in a Doctor Who style, which is great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was neat to see that. And you know, we were talking weeks ago about Victory of the Daleks and how the Daleks looked kind of terrible, really, in Victory of the Daleks. And I point out then that really, it's not that the design is that terrible. They didn't have to look that plasticky. It's just that the cinematographer didn't really do much for that particular substance of which the Daleks are made. And you can see here that with Stephen Pearson helming the photography department, that they looked great. I mean, they looked fantastic, I thought, in this episode.
Yeah, that was...
And I was like...
A scene where they crossed the flame, and it reminded me back in the old series where they had, like, flamethrowers, and, I mean, not that these did, but it was just a scene. There's a shot that you see a Dalek and one of the torches in front of it that was reminiscent.
Right. Yeah, it very much so. You know, getting that slightly... you know, spookier look of a cave and putting them into not, you know, full frontal lighting, but, you know, more down lighting, more side lighting. They look great, I thought, in this episode. And I was immensely glad to have this kind of Dalek rather than the other kind of Dalek that we've had for 4 years. I was like, I'm fully on board. As long as they can light them well, these things look great.
Well, I'm kind of surprised they didn't have both, you know, where the other Daleks were coming back too, but, you know.
Well, I think Dave mentioned the point that Benjamin Elliott had made before, that it's necessary to have a whole new brand of Daleks around, not just because that's a good thing for BBC Worldwide and the profit margin, but because it restarts their narrative, and you can now believe that this is a different clan with a different set of ambitions, mm-hmm. and that, you know, one of those ambitions is conquest. And if you're going to do conquest, you do have to build alliances. So it's nice narratively, actually, we'll see how much more that gets developed. And, you know, it could all go to pot next year when they inevitably return for their, you know, own episode. But certainly within the context of this sort of alliance thing, it works out quite well. I thought too, that somebody pointed out before that there was a comic book feel to this thing, and I think that's true to an extent. It's not really the dialogue or the script itself. It's just the visuals here. And you can certainly imagine this taking place now in the world that really IDW Comics is trying to make. Because IDW, in its current run of 10th Doctor Adventures, certainly in the story Fugitive, for example, is doing this thing where they're putting together lots of different monsters alongside of the Doctor. And, you know, that particular scene where the Doctor, right before he goes into the Pandorica, that honestly has, you could almost say that's been storyboarded already by IDW. It's a curious thing, because I think other episodes of Doctor Who, like maybe Unicorn and the Wasp to an extent, were comic booky in terms of who the alien was, or maybe more for the script kind of. This is more just doing something that, I mean, this was just big visually throughout the entire story. It's a big visual deal. Sometimes they did that really well. Like, I think in the scene, in those final scenes where you get to see all those monsters up with the Doctor, sometimes they tried really hard and did something that was of grand ambition. Like with the scene on Planet One, where the Doctor, you know, sees Hello Sweetie there on the Diamond Cliffs or whatever, but it kind of failed because the matte painting didn't work quite so well. Still, I just thought, I was blown away by the visual scope of the whole thing. It was to me like they were almost trying to do what a comic book can do, but that is really difficult for television. And I just thought that part of it was glorious. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's just so much. You know, will we actually get a satisfactory answer to Rory? Will we get a really great thing that explains every little thing about Amy that hasn't made sense going through, like her familiarity with the Doctor, her instant familiarity with the Doctor? Will that ever really be explained to us?
Well, we won't know until next week. No sense torturing.
We really won't know until next week.
Whether it will or won't until you see it.
Well, but that's what you do in the week between, isn't it? And you know, this feels like a great week between. It's not quite at the level of the week between Journey's End and Stolen Earth, but it's a better week between than like Army of Ghosts and Doomsday or Parting the Ways and Bad Wolf. It's a really great cliffhanger, and it gives the mind lots of different directions to go in. So I think this is going to be a good week for people who are fans of Doctor Who, because they'll really be talking about it and trying to make some sense out of it. And I think it was strong enough for the casual viewer that they'll come back just because the episode was so gloriously bonkers in terms of all the things that were being thrown out onto the table. So, you know, I can give it a rating in terms of the effect upon the casual viewer. And I think there, it's a 5, because I think really people are, again, they're going to want to come back and see it. And they probably couldn't have put this thing on and easily torn their eyes away from it. But I think, you know, for me, I personally can't give it a rating for my own taste, because so much is up in the air and so much could go incredibly wrong.
We'll get your rating as a whole next week.
Withdrawing. We will indeed.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Darth.
Thank you.
As always. And enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much. Indeed. You too, sir.
All right.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for the insight. Have a good one.
You too.
Guys, I'm gonna have to do my usual one, unfortunately, and leg it off
Silence
a little bit early, because I've got
dreams.
Indeed. I've got work tomorrow, unfortunately. I have to get up very early.
Crack in time.
If only. Maybe it would give me a bit of insight into what's going on next week. But with the Big Bang, but time, as you said, Lewis, will tell. We can only wait and see what's going to happen. But terrifically excited about it all, I think, as I think everybody is, to see what's going to happen. So, and very sad, because it's going to be the end of Doctor Who for a while, and we're going to have to wait until Christmas to see how things wrap up. But never mind. There we are.
Doctor Who Podshock will still prevail. There'll be plenty of Doctor Who for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of studio shows left for the rest of the year. That's true.
All right. Well, thank you,
James. All right, Jim. Thanks ever so much.
And wish your father well. Wish him a happy Father's Day for me.
Indeed. Yeah. Thanks, mate. All the best, guys.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Why have you brought me here? Amy. Oh, Doctor, why do I let you out? Who are those Romans?
Projections or duplicates?
It's a trap. It has to be. They used Amy to construct a scenario you'd believe, to get close to you.
Why? Who'd do that? What for? It doesn't make sense.
Doctor, there's something wrong with the TARDIS. Like something else is controlling it.
You're flying it wrong. Where are you? What's the date reading?
26th of June, 2010.
You need to get out of there now. Any other time zone, just go.
I can't break free.
Silence will fall.
Ready to come out, are we?
I'm not going! I'm Rory!
Doctor, I'm down. I've landed.
Doctor, I can't open the door! You have to run. You have to get as far away from here as you can. I'm the thing that I'll kill you. Just go! I'm Rory.
Williams. Rory Williams from Ledworth. My boyfriend.
Plastic Romans. Duplicates.
The Pandorica is ready!
Ready for what?
Ready for you!
You remember? And you. Staying.
No. No.
Hey, you lot.
An alliance.
The cracks in time are the work of the Doctor. It is confirmed.
No, not me, the TARDIS. And I'm not in the TARDIS, am I? Listen to me.
You will be prevented.
Total event collapse. Every sun will supernova at every moment in history. The whole universe will never have existed. Please listen to me!
Seal the Pandorica.
No! Please listen to me! The TARDIS is exploding right now and I'm the only one who can stop it! Listen to me!
I'm sorry, my love.
Continued next week. Cheers, everyone. Bye. No, only kidding. Let's get to Russell. Hello, Russell. You're live on Doctor Who Podshock again.
Hello. Wow. What a way to follow that. That's a. And what a to be continued it was this week. Holy moly! I thought overall this was probably one of the best episodes of this series so far. I think it really delivered on a lot of things. It was nice that they did. It's funny, I didn't notice it the first time. And then Confidential mentioned it. Like, yeah, it was a little pitch Indiana Jones in this particular adventure, which was nice.
Yeah.
It's very, very atmospheric, very well done. The Autons thing was a really complete surprise. As soon as I saw the hand flip down, I was like, great, Autons. And it was nice to see. The Rory thing coming back was a surprise to me. And I'm curious to see to where they go with it.
Well,
really,
I knew he was somehow was going to come back, but how was a surprise.
Yeah. The last thing I thought he'd come back is an Auton. But hey, that interesting mix there. The Cyberman, you know, head, that was kind of cool. And that, generally, to me, has to be one of the creepiest moments in this series so far, really. If there's anything to give kids a little bit of a nightmare, that the head popping out was a nice touch. I think that was just...
Yeah, I thought the whole sequence worked very well. I can nitpick, you know, as I did before, but I think it worked very well.
No, I mean, it serves what it would have been. You know, I wasn't sure how much Cyberman we would have in this episode, but I think that was... He did something different with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that he kept Russell T. Davies' design and didn't try to...
I think they already have the costumes and the props and all that on hand, so...
I think they're also trying to emphasize that it wasn't just our universe that was in peril as well.
But I think that's because they had those props and stuff on hand. I think maybe if they had the budget, maybe they might have brought back the real Cybermen, but we still haven't seen them return other than a head in a museum, you know, since the series has come back.
And it wouldn't surprise me if there still is a Moffat redo when it comes to Cybermen. They just maybe didn't have the time to budget.
Holding out for one.
I think he's just that in mind. I thought the scenes at the end with all of the villains in there was interesting, although why the Jadoon was there, considering they're supposed to be cyber police, they're supposed to be the policemen of the universe, I thought that was a little strange.
Well, it made it official then, didn't it?
It's like all these villains and then the Jadoon.
It wasn't a lynch party, it was official.
So I guess you really have to be in trouble when the Jadoon team up with the, you know, Cybermen and Daleks, and you're really gonna bit of a pickle. So that was weird, and it was a nice sight. We heard a mention of Zygon. Whether we'll actually ever see a Zygon.
Well, yeah, Draconians, and we didn't see or hear the Ice Warriors, but we have to assume perhaps they were there.
Yeah, and we did see a Sycorax ship in the sky, which was nice.
The Confidentials. I don't know if I saw in the episode proper.
There was a ziggurat in the grouping. Yeah. I think it was with a weasel in front of him.
Yeah, so that was a weird little Torchwood.
A weevil, sorry.
Yeah, put in there. I didn't expect to see that at all. I liked, again, River did a good job in this. How they resolve this for next week, I really don't know. They really... set it up there's no way of getting out of this one.
That's why it's a big cliffhanger.
Yeah, I mean, I thought at the very least maybe River would have landed and just gone out the door, you know, and then the TARDIS would have done something really looking horrific, and she would have been there with a smoking TARDIS, and maybe that would have been an out.
It's a trifold of cliffhangers. We have, you know, the Doctor in his cliffhanger, Amy, and of course River.
So I don't know how they're going to resolve this, really. I mean, I'm hearing rumors that maybe a younger version of Amy will fix this, but since River was trapped in the TARDIS, I don't really see...
Well, we could speculate all we like for next week, but until we see next week, there's really no way to know what's going on.
I think of all, this is one of the better cliffhangers we've seen in a long time. One of the ones that truly went, like, really, how did he get out of this? I mean, I think the last one I remember that was like this to me was the Army of Ghosts, where he was surrounded by Cybermen and with no really real way out at the time. And I thought, you know, it's nice that they're doing that. But I just hope it's not a too easy a solution, like with the Night Doctor and the whole go home bit. That was... That was too easy. So I'm hoping it's not that simple. I hope that the villain, the mastermind behind this, is actually revealed, because they're hinting to high heaven, there's somebody else that, you know, doing this all. But will we see it, or will we have to wait till Christmas before we see it?
Again, you're just speculating. So just, you know. We won't know until next week. I'm keeping myself pretty clear and, you know, keeping the slate pretty clear for next week. So whatever happens, happens. But I'm not worried about next week until next week.
But yeah, overall, I would say it was a good setup and the one I most enjoyed of the season, really, honestly. I think And the acting between Rory and Amy just trying to figure things out and that hand flipping down. Just really, really well done. I would give this my first five of this series.
Yay!
The first one really good. I enjoyed. It had everything that I wanted. Atmospheric, moodiness, and lumbering monsters. So that's Doctor Who to me.
Fantastic. All right, yeah. Well, we'll be back next week doing the same thing, and if you return with us, we'll find out if all those check boxes are checked, both you and Darth, and everything that needs to be explained, if whether or not they'll be explained or not. But I just hope I enjoy the ride.
Oh, I hope so, too. I'm really, once again, looking forward, as everybody, with mixed emotions of, darn, it's going to be over, but darn, I hope it's good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again, Russell.
Okay.
Cheers.
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 And Mr. Taras, you're live on Doctor Who Podtruck again.
Hello, sweetie.
I love when he says that to me. That's right. You were back. You were on the show last time River was on the show. Well, River was on the series.
Yes, I was. Now, so far, wasn't this a fantastic way to link in all the other stories so far?
Yeah, I think they did a marvelous job. That teaser of this episode really tied everything in.
And kind of what this story is alluding to is that what they probably did is during the filming of those individual episodes, while the sets were still up, they were filming these additional scenes, which probably explains why a lot of the episodes were only about 42, 43 minutes in length, as opposed to some episodes like Vampires in Venice that went 48 minutes, because they probably didn't have any scenes set in that particular location that they could film. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't eating out of that episode's time budget.
Yeah, but they also said in The Hungry Earth that they, in The Confidential for that, that they had to edit it down to fit the, they had 45 minutes that they had to make it fit into. So obviously there's some sort of premeditated time allotment that they have to work with.
But it's amazing that they have that flexibility. I mean, one hopes that whatever time the end result is for each episode, it's been arrived at because they can't cut anymore. They've got the best balance. I mean, you would have thought, really, in this day and age, it was 45 minutes, not a second more sort of thing, but thankfully not.
Like, I remember when looking at some of the cast lists that they were compiling on, like, Gallifrey Base or other locations, they had, Okinuto who played Liz 10?
Yes,
They had her listed for a couple of episodes where she did not appear in, so it was probably they were filming that scene with Kingston, with River Song, during that same time period.
Yeah. And so she's just received some honor that Darth was mentioning. I don't know whether Darth can put that in text. I can't remember whether it was an OBE or something. OBE, thank you.
Yeah.
It's very, very interesting how they interwove everything in this series going. And one thing that I think that Stephen Moffat did with this finale so far is he out-wrestled Russell T. Davies with the grandstanding finale. It's like Russell had the gumption to put the Daleks and the Cybermen together. Moffat took him one step further, and in addition to them two, he adds the kitchen sink with almost every other monster we've seen in the new series.
And also mentions of, even stuff that we haven't seen in the new series, stuff from, long ago. We don't see them on screen, but they mentioned the Draconians, and I think Russell said they mentioned the Zygons.
Right. And the Chalote Nians, which are Gareth Roberts' invention from the novels.
Oh, okay.
So there's a whole bunch of nods, various things, both in the classic series and in other media. But one of the things that now we probably need to do, at least those who want to try to figure out what's going on, is you need to look at all the episodes and all those little things that struck you as being off or why is this not fit, and think of how that may relate to what we're dealing with now. Like, for example, one thing that I think may be very important is that whole time difference in the 11th hour, and probably why the 11th hour was a extended length episode, is because it just had to have stuff in it that hinted to what's going to happen in the finale. I'm not going to go into the details, but there are a number of inconsistencies that, for fear of being, in case the thing is a spoiler, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there's a lot of inconsistencies there that may either be resolved or be the cause of the resolution of what we're going to see in the finale.
And that goes
for the other episodes as well.
Yeah. I think if it doesn't come to be, then I think some people might be disappointed because they had their heart set on that will be the case. So, you know, but we'll see.
And this is also, now we see why we had that voiceover in the Cold Blood episode, in that there would be no sense for why the new series Silurians would be with this group if they didn't reawaken and be available as a starfaring group, or at least be available to be met by these other species.
Yeah, but I don't think that justifies the narration in that episode. I
think that's why it was done. It was to kind of make them awake at a certain point in time.
Well, I have to show that there would be a way, otherwise people would say, hang on a minute, they're in hibernation, they may never wake up. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as Darth was saying, that they're still on Earth.
Right, but they're in hibernation, and if they oversleep their alarms again, then they're not around.
True. But an awful lot is hinging on this last episode, more so, I think, than any other series that we've had.
Yeah, well,
I mean, basically, this is not Trial of a Time Lord. This is the Trial of Stephen Moffat, isn't it?
Plus, one thing I find interesting is on the BBC website, they highlight various characters as being important to the Doctor, and all of them, with exception of one, has been featured in this episode.
Which one? I'm sorry, you say that again. Which?
Craig Owens is the one that hasn't made an appearance in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be hilarious if he saves the universe.
Well, we didn't see anything of Vampires of Venice in this episode either, so it's...
Yeah. But it could well be that other time ship that was in the Lodger episode could maybe play a part. I don't know. It certainly was something that showed that the TARDIS could be influenced by outside forces, because, of course, we know Riversong is supposed to be able to fly the TARDIS even better than the Doctor, but something is causing that. And as James said right at the top of the show, that's really been one of the most unexplained parts, that... They've lured the Doctor here into this trap in this very convoluted plot, but we don't know how the other side of the equation of destroying the TARDIS has been brought about.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could, again, you know, until next week, you know, we can.
Well, I thought in that last clip we actually hear it explode, don't we?
Do we?
Well, we see a light after. River Song opens the doors, sees that there's no way to get out of the TARDIS, then turns around, and then we see a white, bright light, and then a fade to white, I believe.
Well, it closes with the Earth, you know, and that's it. So, Anyway, so thank you, Taras. I know you, I won't ask you for a TARDIS rating, but I think you thoroughly enjoyed the episode. I'll can extrapolate that.
Oh yes, I did. It was an amazing penultimate episode, and it really, I think, bodes well for what we're going to see next week. Hopefully, most people will enjoy it, but we'll see how it turns out.
All right. Well, thank you again, Taras. Until next week, cheers.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks. All right, last but not least is Mr. Charlie P. Hello, Charlie. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, hi, Lewis. Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
Hi, Charlie.
Oh, I'm fine. Sort of painting yourself in a corner there, Moffat. Yeah, I like this one. It's kind of overwhelming. Episode. I've only watched it once, but sort of an overwhelming episode. The whole bit with the audio cues, you know, just hearing the Daleks and the Cybermen right there, you know, and with the Riversong listing off the all the aliens showing up. I thought that was probably the biggest, I was shivered down my spine. It was sort of a scream moment for me. Even like they mentioned aliens from Galaxy 4, you know, going back to the Hartnell area. I thought, oh, anyway, and just the review of the Autons, just the way, just, you know, how they hold their hands up, the way, you know, in typical Auton fashion.
Yeah, when that first happened, yeah. I said, oh, that's right, you know, Auton like, and I figured, well, the it's just a coincidence, and then it turned out actually to be the Autons, and I was shocked and surprised.
Well, and they're making those robot moves, and I went, well, who are they supposed to be? And I, oh, okay. Yeah, it's just like, I like that whole bit with Rory, and then, you know, the doctor, just that whole little bit with, you know, the doctor poking at Rory to see, you know, who he actually is. You know, we get that scene, I forgot which scene it was, but when the doctor has those Cybermen guns, and you see some Roman soldiers in the background playing around with them briefly. Yeah, oh, that was nice. Yeah, I have no idea how this is going to resolve itself, but I'm saying that it's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no coming attractions, so we're completely oblivious.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the dark for next week, which is actually a good thing. I like not knowing, so.
Yeah. And you just have a scary voice saying sounds will fall. And,
because what could they do? I mean, in the trailer, unless they show a trailer without the Doctor, without River, and without Amy, it will give too much. It will give anything away. You can't have a trailer for next week because
you can show Rory. You can show Auton Rory.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, what kind of trailer would that?
No,
be?
It's all over. Everything's destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that was the whole plan. Moffat wants. He wanted a cliffhanger. Then all cliffhangers, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I have to watch it again to catch everything, but. Yeah, overall.
Yeah. How many TARDIS groans?
Oh, I don't know yet.
All right.
I'll have to watch the second part. But, you say, you know, I don't know if I'm sad that the show's going to be over with, but, you know, I'm looking forward to watching it all over again.
Yeah, well, there's rewatchability there. So, and then there's, you know.
Very much so.
There'll be other stuff to keep us, you know, entertained.
Yes.
All right. Well,
hi, Dr. Upacha.
Yes, well, that too. Well, thank you again, Charlie, and happy Father's Day, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
Too.
Cheers.
Bye.
All right. Well, that's going to round out the show, and thank you for everyone that participated. And it was a fun show. It was a good episode to review, and of course, it's only part one. So next week is part two. So we'll be back next week for doing this all over again, and hopefully you can join us again then. All right, Dave?
Certainly will. It's very, very exciting. One of the best cliffhangers we've had, and everything, it depends on it. So, Moffat, don't disappoint.
All right. Well, until next week, take care, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.
But wait, you guessed it, there's more.
As always, if you can't make it to the live show, you can send us your feedback using the Doctor Who Podchalk public call box at 206-600-6517, and that's a phone number you can call anytime, night or day. It doesn't have to be during our live show. It's a voicemail system, so you just leave your message there, and we could possibly use it in the show. Once again, the phone number is 206-600-6517. Be aware that it's a 206 area code number in the U.S. But before we go to our recorded feedback, we'd like to remind everyone about Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy has stores in Austin and San Antonio, Texas, and now, just recently, they opened up a new store in Bellevue, Washington. They sell Doctor Who action figures, CDs, comics, and more. They also sell board games, role-playing games, card games, graphic novels, manga, and a whole lot more. Check out their website at dlair.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. We're coming up on their 24th anniversary. While the Gallifreyan Embassy is celebrating their 25th, they're on their 24th, so they're catching up. Make sure you wish them a happy anniversary and visit them again in person in Austin or San Antonio, Texas, or in Bellevue, Washington. Or you can give them a call at 512-454-2399. As always, visit their website at dlair.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. And if you don't see what you're looking for, give them a call or shoot them an email. So first up in our recorded feedback is none other than Graham Sheridan, our correspondent in Germany, with his take on The Pandorica Opens.
Hello, it's Graham the Second Dr. Sheridan here, and these are my thoughts to The Pandorica Opens. It's a great little crack of a story, though it did take the second viewing for me to sort of think much better of it. I think I must have watched it way too tired after coming in after nights of work. I was really looking forward to this, and I was literally watching it after an 11-hour shift. No real good idea, I suppose. So, the little ideas here and there, the thing that really, really made me so happy was that the Cybermen have become much more dangerous. Even a head is dangerous on its own, which I thought was brilliant, and that the body can operate without its head. The little skull inside, sort of as a shocker, I thought was a brilliant little idea going on there. But not to dwell on the one sort of thing that really made me extremely happy. So, other things that made me extremely happy? Professor Riversong's back, and in some tightly fitting trousers. The fact that the first words ever written in the universe were written by her and said, "Hello, sweetie," was really funny, I found, and was much to my delight. Other great little points, the little comical bits going between the Doctor and Amy as the Doctor needs a distraction from the cybernetic arm that's just firing free at will. And as I don't know so much as predicted, but I suspected and have said so, Rory's back, although it be plastic Rory. So, I'm waiting for our South Park-style Death of Rory Part 3. It's bound to come along. Well, actually, if we're taking it as read that everything has exploded and everything has died, then I would say, yeah, we have the South Park Death of Rory Part 3. So, my other thoughts to this. Well, I'm trying to collect them at the moment, and personally, I loved the ending. It had more of an effect on me the second time round. The fact that the most dangerous enemies of the Doctor clubbed together to throw him into the Pandorica, and it's not just the enemies, I mean, some of the creatures there were not so much as enemies, but also as previous allies, such as the Jadoon were allies before, to a certain extent, even though they didn't like it. All in all, a nice tight little story, well done to Mr. Stephen Moffat for almost getting it right, but we've still got one episode to go, so I'm trying to take down my expectations, because the second part has, apart from the Angels' second part, have been disappointing this season. So we'll see how it goes. So my markings for this story is a clear 5 out of 5. Well, I say clear, it's 4.75, which is, you know, it's roughly a 9 out of 10. So I do have one prediction. This is not based on any spoilers I've seen, but a feeling I have. It could be, and this is only my thoughts, my predictions, mind you, that this complete entire series has actually only ever been a dream. But for who? My tip? Amelia Pond. I don't mean Amy, I mean Amelia. I'll see next week if I was right or not. So this is Graham, the second Dr. Sheridan, signing off. With any luck, I'll see you live next week. Bye for now.
Thank you, Graham. And for those that don't know, in addition to being our correspondent in Germany, Graham also maintains a blog with us on our website, thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. So you can always find Graham on our website, as well as our podcast. So, and Graham, I agree, depending on your condition when you first watch a new episode of Doctor Who, greatly depends on whether or not you appreciate the episode or not, because I remember The Hungry Earth, I was exhausted, I think, watching that initially firsthand, and was very tired, and I was working, I think, probably doing post-production work for Doctor Who Podshock, and then watching that, and I was just so tired that the second viewing of that was just like so much, it was almost like watching a new episode, and I appreciated that story so much more, that part one of two of that story, so much more on the second viewing than I did on the first. So yeah, your mental state of mind when watching new episodes of Doctor Who greatly depends on your appreciation of that given episode. As far as theories go, anything's possible. I have some theories as well. We can always speculate, and but you know what? Trying to keep the slate clean for next week. So whatever happens, however it's resolved, it's resolved, and I'm not really lynching onto any particular theory, be it someone else's or my own. There was another point I wanted to make about your feedback, which escapes me now. It's falling through a crack in time. All right, well, if I think about it, I'll come back to it later. Let's get to Brent and his thoughts on the Pandorica Opens.
Hey, guys, this is Brent from Raleigh, North Carolina, again. Just watched the Pandorica Opens, and I have two words. Holy crap. That was awesome. I loved it. I loved it. That was really, really good. Lots of twists and turns in there that I totally didn't see coming until right before they happened. I mean, the whole time I was trying to guess who was in the Pandorica, and the whole time it was a trap to put him in there. And the whole thing with the Romans and being Autons, and oh, man, that was really awesome and just really dramatic, and the way they built it up at the end. And, you know, is Amy dead or is she going to wake up and the whole thing's part of her memories, or, you know, is this all the Dream Master that we saw in Amy's Choice, or just what the heck is going on? That was really awesome. The only two things that I can think of that were a little off were just little minor things, like the Doctor lighting a torch with a sonic screwdriver was kind of eh. And the whole thing about him, you know, all of his enemies are overhead and all he had to do was stand on top of a rock and just give them a good talking to and they all left. But then you find out later that they really didn't leave. Anyway, I just thought it was a really, really great episode. I can't wait to find out what happens next week. And they didn't even give us a preview, which I thought was awesome. I really don't want to know what happens until I see it. So anyway, talk to you guys next week. See ya.
Well, thank you once again, Brent. And yeah, as I said earlier in the live show, is that you really couldn't do a preview for next week without giving anything away, because you had this whole cliffhanger with the Doctor and with River Song and whether or not
Amy is dead or not. So if you've shown any of those characters in the preview, you'll know, you know. it kind of takes away from their cliffhanger situation. So, yeah. Let's get to Adam Pearson and his thoughts. I think this goes back to the larger, but his feedback just came in while I was in post-production, while this episode was in post-production, so it's being included here, even though it was from the larger and should have been in our last episode. But nonetheless, let's hear from Adam Pearson now.
Hi, Lewis, James, and Ken, and everybody listening to Podshock. It's Adam here from the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. I was spurred into action to sending in this feedback by the fact that you lot were talking about how overused the perception filter has been in this series. It has been totally and utterly overused and shows a complete and utter lack of imagination. And I'll tell you what will really annoy me is if they decide to use that phrase to explain what the TARDIS looks like at some point. I wouldn't put it past them, because I know Moffat's trying to sort of slightly change the history of Doctor Who, but most of the stuff he's going to have to say is pretty good. On the subject of the episode you're referring to, The Lodger, I absolutely love the episode. I'm a football fan, I'm a Doctor Who fan, so it had everything for me. A couple of annoying things that I mentioned on my own podcast, and if you want to hear those comments, please tune in the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. And I'll see you next time. Bye!
Thank you, Adam, and obviously your feedback couldn't have been included in our last episode reviewing The Lodger, because your feedback was a result of our last episode reviewing The Lodger. So unless we did the timey-wimey thing and somehow got your feedback in our last episode before it was released and you heard it so you could comment on it. Yeah. Well, thank you again, Adam Pearson. And you can check out his podcast. I'm sure it's probably available via iTunes if you do a search on it. And as far as the perception filter goes, yeah, I think it's a bit overused a bit since its introduction, and you know, sort of and going back to Brent's message right before Adam was about the sonic screwdriver being used to light torches, and yeah, I thought that especially during I think the Russell T. Davies era, I think the sonic screwdriver was just used a bit too much to do too many things. And to a certain extent, the same thing's happening now, but perhaps not as much. But it's I think it needs some limitations, you know, just like the Doctor himself, and, you know, it just can't be an old functioning device that does everything. So I know that there are some limitations already, but I think it just does too much and it's become too much of a magic wand in a sense. Anyway, that's going to wrap up this show. Thank you. We'll be back next time, reviewing the conclusion, the last and final episode of this series, the 2010 series, the 2010 series, with Matt Smith as the Doctor. As always, you can follow us on our website. There's further discussions of this episode and many others on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podshock.net. Both will get you to the same site. You can follow us all on Twitter as well. You can follow Doctor Who Podshock at twitter.com/podshock. You can follow Dave Cooper at twitter.com/DaveAC. You can follow James Norton at twitter.com/James Norton. And of course, you can follow myself at twitter.com/Lewis Trapani. So until next time, cheers, everyone. You've been listening to Doctor Who Podshock, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
The Pandorica is ready!
Ready for what?
Ready for you!